Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another amazing episode of Breaking Barriers Now podcast. I am your host, Jody Watkins. And today, my amazing guest is Lakedra Houston. And she's actually hailing from Dallas. So we said, don't get that confused. But she is an Air Force veteran, and she is just doing amazing things. I told her earlier when we were talking, I kind of started stalking her when I heard her on another podcast that we were both on. And didn't even know it. I friended her on Instagram, and I was like, I gotta learn more about her. So I really do appreciate your time today. I appreciate you coming on. I want to go ahead and give a shout out to our sponsors. We have Convene Communities, which is a platform with a purpose. Our founder is also a Marine veteran. His name is Matthew Curran, and we're doing big things there. So definitely hoping that Lakedra will want to be a part of that. Shameless plug. And then our other sponsor is First Approved Financial. We are helping business owners with business funding and business capital and making sure that their businesses are running legally and ready to build wealth. So thank you to those two sponsors today. Again, Lakedra, thank you so much for just showing up. I always tell people, like, I just need you to show up.
Thank you so much.
So I'm just going to let you have the floor, you know, just tell us a little bit about, you know, a little bit about you, your upbringing, kind of some things that, you know, what made you go in the Air Force and what made you do what you're doing now?
Yeah. So a little bit about me, you know, I come from a little city outside of Dallas called Garland, Texas, and, you know, went to school, played college ball, volleyball, and got injured. And, you know, the Air Force is what I had, right?
Sounds and, like me, but mine was basketball.
So, yeah, and yeah. I like basketball. I just wasn't that good, but, you know. But, yeah, so I joined the Air Force. And, you know, before I joined the Air Force, I was going through a lot of traumatic situations that happened when I was a kid and kind of like were, you know, resurfacing. And so right before I went to Air Force, I started, you know, hanging out with friends and drinking and, you know, doing drugs to get over that pain. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing my friends, like, we're 17, 18, all going to rehab. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Like, I have to get out of here.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't want to. And, you know, I grew up in a Christian back, you know, home. And so it was so weird to kind of be the one that goes out and does something opposite of what you're told. And so I thought, you know, I can make it right by going and running away from my problems by joining the Air Force. And what's so crazy, 2 weeks, actually 2 weeks before I signed up, 9/11 happened. So I was on the floor watching, everything happened with 9/11.
So you came in after 9/11. I came in right before 9/11.
Yes, I came in after. And what was so crazy, I was on the floor and that's how I told my parents that I was going to the Air Force. And they're like, why are you crying? I was like, I signed up and I gotta go and I'm going to be over there and I'm going to die. And they're like, what are you talking about?
So you had that's already signed up before 9/11. They didn't know.
They didn't know. Goodness. They had no idea. I was in the late entry program and I was supposed to be in like the buddy system.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And the girl ended up not going. So it delayed.
I've heard that.
It delayed my contract and I was so mad.
Oh no.
Yeah. It was crazy. So that's how I told them. They're like, no, whatever. You're not going to the Air Force, you know, go back to school, all the other stuff. And
yeah.
So I left and you know, the recruiter, you know, we know the good games, you know what to say. And he was telling me all the
backstory on that.
And I was a recruiter. You don't even want me to go.
We need to do a whole nother podcast on that one.
Oh, you have no idea. I was like, I have to say this, but it was horrible. But
goodness.
I signed up and I told him, I was like, I gotta go. And I explained to them what was going on. And just telling them I was just hanging around the wrong people and I just needed more discipline. And you know, tell them about the benefits. So they were okay finally when I said I need to get out of here. And so I left in January. And once I left, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be medical because my recruiter told me I was gonna be medical. So I go to basic training. They said, hey, Lakedra, you're gonna be a cop. Here's your paperwork. And I was like, what?
I always tell people, like, you never know where these podcasts are going to go, right? But
yes,
it's funny. And you said January. What date in January? I'm curious.
January 8th.
Okay, yeah, so mine was January 5th. January 5th, 2000. All right, so you were like right behind me then.
Yeah, I was in 22. I mean, 2002.
Yeah, 2002. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But so that's what happens though, right? Like I went to the recruiter and I'm like, I got to get out of here. Right. Kind of similar story. So I go in and I'm like, you know, what do you have open? He's like, well, your ASVAB scores are pretty good for this. And so they're looking at open electronics. And I'm like, well, I'm doing sports and exercise medicine. So that's like completely opposite. But I was like, okay, well, I've never worked on computers. So, okay, cool. I'll learn something different, right? I'll learn a new trade.
Yeah.
Halfway into tech school, I made it to tech school. Halfway into tech school, I found out I was going to be working on airplanes.
So it's, what?
It's different, but it's similar. So you went in. So did you go in open general or?
I did. I went open general. And
that's what happens. Everybody gets, everybody, you guys, kids, if you're listening, if you're going to the recruiter, I tell people all the time, if you're going to the recruiter, you need to know what you want and you need to stand by it. Because if you go in open general, nine times out of 10, and I've seen this a lot and you've seen it firsthand, you're going to be security forces.
Yes, you are. Yes. Yes. And they kind of changed that part too. We're going to get onto that one day, but they kind of changed how we do that too, because of my story. And I was like, no, we're not going to do this.
Oh my goodness.
So let me back up. So right before I got there to basic training, 2 weeks prior, as always, some crazy stuff happened. So 2 weeks prior, I was in the car and my friend had drugs in the car and we got pulled over and the cop was like, hey, you know, y'all are going to jail. And I'm sitting there freaking out. I was like, go to the Air Force. I can't go. You know, so I was screaming. Thank God he allowed me to leave. And he was like, just go home. You know, if you're going to Air Force, make some of yourself. But I see you back in these streets. I'm taking you to jail. And so that was the crazy part. Yeah. Oof. So,
yeah. By the grace of God. Oh, my goodness. Talk about
favor, right? Yes. Favor. Yeah. So it was amazing that I was able to just go and then, you know, being a cop, I was so sad, but it taught me a lot.
It got you away from where you were, right? Like I wanted to kind of stop you earlier. I want to commend you first of all, because, and this is something that I hope kids listen to, like because there's a lot of stuff out there, right? Like I could have gone a completely different direction. Most of my friends were doing drugs, involved with drugs, you know, so I could have done that too. But I want to commend you because you actually noticed that that's not what you wanted.
Correct.
And you went the other way. So like for me, when I got out of high school, I was living out of my car and all I knew is I didn't want to do that. Right. I wanted to play basketball. And so I'm grateful that I had someone that brought me down to Gainesville, Florida. And she said, hey, come down here, go to school. And I did, but then I didn't have money management. That's a whole nother thing.
Ooh, me and too.
So, yes. So what happened? I ended up moving back and I ended up joining the Air Force, but I want to just commend you because I think a lot of kids out there, teenagers, young adults need to hear this. You guys, you have a choice. You have a choice. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you think. I don't care who you are. You have a choice. There are other options out there. So no matter how dark it looks, go look for something else.
Yeah.
And you did that. So I want to commend you for that.
Yes, thank you. And I was like the one in our, well, I was one of the few women, I think I was the only woman that were in the that went to the military. So it was crazy that me of all people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when I
and then after 9/11 and telling your parents, what did your parents say whenever you told them? Like, were they freaking out or?
So they're my grandparents, but they basically raised me, but they were like, are you sure? Are you like, you don't want to stay here. You don't want to stay home. You sure you want to go? And I'm like, I have to, I was like, I'm going to end up either pregnant or on drugs. Like I had to figure it out. Ooh. And I think they respected that. So yeah, when they knew I wanted to do something better and I didn't want to, you know, be a teenage mom like my mother or do those things, they, you know, were okay with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were proud. So go to tech school, right? And even in basic training, because that's when I've told them to be a cop. I hated shooting guns. My father was murdered, was shot to death. So yeah, so it had triggered me and I did not realize that it had triggered me when I was out there shooting the gun. And so I'm sitting there and I'm shaking, I'm sweating, like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. I can't pull the trigger. Like, but my instructors there were so calm with me. They were understanding with me and they, you know, that's the part I loved about
being
in training and military training, because they taught me like, hey, you know, you can do it. Like they put so much confidence in me that I was like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah.
And then going to being a cop, it was the same thing. It was like, okay, I can do this. So it was interesting, but it helped me gain a certain confidence that I didn't have if I would have stayed home.
And it probably helped you heal a little bit too, right?
Because it did.
Like one thing, because I do some things with other kids that have gone through trauma and stuff like that. And I've gone through a lot of trauma. And what I tell people, like, you don't always know what their triggers are going to come, right? Mm-hmm. Or you don't even know what they are going to look like because you don't even know that they exist, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, for you, you had no idea how that was going to affect you later on in life until you got in that situation. But you were able to work through it. So that's the thing that I always tell people. It's like, you know, it's going to be difficult at first, but you know, you can attest, I can attest, like as long as we work through it and mm-hmm. we have good people around us who mm-hmm. help us work through it, because that's key. So, I mean, that's really good that you had that, you know, because I've heard different stories, right? Where you have people, especially on the gun range, where they're yelling at you, right? And they're making you feel like crap. And so for somebody who has a traumatic experience and is having difficulty getting through that, that's just going to make it worse for them. So their mm-hmm. confidence can actually go completely downhill.
Yeah. And then you have to tell them. So my thing was, I had to tell my instructors what was going on, because it was, you know, they're human too. You know, they may yell at you, but I was like, look, this is what happened and this is why I'm struggling. So if I need to go home, which I really didn't want to, but I'm like, if I need to go home, I'll go home, because I was adamant on not shooting that gun, you know. But it was it taught me a lot, but they were understanding, and they and I had good instructors, and some people are not fortunate, but I had good instructors.
But that's good you told them too, because that's something else that, you know, I struggled with and a lot of people struggle with. It's like, we're maybe it's fear of being judged, fear of whatever, right? And it's like, oh, I don't want anybody to know that this happened or whatever, and so we don't say anything, but then the people can't understand us. You know, they are going to judge us because they don't understand where we're coming from. But like, you know, you told them. And so that's probably why you had a better experience, because once you told them, now they're like, oh, this is something different, right? This isn't just her not wanting to shoot the gun, right? This isn't her just being like a coward. This is her processing. This is her healing. So,
So it was good. So, you know, my family, you know, after they saw me, they are very, very happy. It was a lot of things that happened in basic training. My sister, I know I'm about to go deep, but my sister, she was deaf, and she always wanted to, you know, she loved the planes and stuff. So in a way, I kind of like was doing this for her too, going to the Air Force. But so they came and saw me, and everybody was so happy, and they set me down on graduation. They're like, look, your sister was right. And I'm sitting there like, excuse me? Yeah. And so they didn't want to tell me during basic training because they thought I was going to flip out. So I was watching her demeanor. I was like, she's so different. She's and I would have. And she was so distant. And I was like, what? I didn't understand. But I was like, maybe she's just because we've been away from each other. I don't know. But I saw her sleeping. I saw the trauma that affected her. And I talked to her about it once my mom told me, and I just sat down with her and I told her, I said, I'm here. I understand. I've been in your shoes. So if you need me, I'm here. And I think that put a lot of pressure off her, because when you're in the deaf community and that happens, everybody, you know, blames you, it's your fault or whatever, or because you can't say no,
right?
Or they can't understand those words, you know, they're like, oh, you wanted this to happen. So it was a lot. It was a lot to put on me and her, and but definitely her. So it was a good, it was a bad experience, but it was good. So I could, you know, I felt like I could protect her more. So that happened.
I mean, I don't want to go too deep if you don't want to, but so that happened to you as well?
Yeah. So that happened to me. So my first exercise happened at 6, and that was by a family member, and it was two cousins. And think about, you're 6 and you have these teenager boys, you know, it didn't get to the point to rape, but it was close to penetration. So somebody came in the room where I was.
Jesus.
And just think about 6 years old. I didn't think about this stuff. Like, I was from age 6 till I think 13 was when it came back up. So about 6 to 11, about 5 years is when it was going on. And think about, you're getting threatened. Like, if you say something, you know, we're going to hurt you, you know, those things in their family, and everybody's loves them, you know? So when that happened, I was like, okay, I don't know. So 13, I saw something on Oprah. This is crazy how God works. So I saw it on Oprah. I was sitting there with my grandmother, and I said, look, I said, Granny, you know, that happened to me. And I was like, I didn't know, you know, that this is like really bad. And she's like, yeah, that's bad. So I told her about it. in my head, I'm thinking the cop's going to call. I'm going to get it in, you know, staying, like, I'm thinking all these things are going to happen. And I was silenced. I was silenced. And it was like, girl, you better not say nothing. You know, it's, we have things that happen in the family, you know, but it would just tear us up if you say something. So I was like, okay, now I can't say anything. So you basically
got taught to shut up and call her too.
Yeah. And so now you're around these people and you have to go to family reunions. You have to see them and you're like, I don't want to be around them. And even to this day, coming back here home, they still bring them up knowing what they did. And I'm like, why are y'all still bringing these people around me? You know, so yeah, it was horrible, but that's what got me using, you know, when I started, I kind of put sports on the back burner, you know, was taking ecstasy to the point I was up like almost 48 hours and I had a game the following day, but I just wanted to release that. Yeah. And then I'll be out there playing volleyball and all of a sudden my mind is like going crazy because sometimes the they call it the trip is delayed.
Right.
So I was sitting there like on the court spazzing and I'm like, I have to go. Like I would tell my coach, I'm not feeling good, but it was because the effects of ecstasy and smoking weed and all this other stuff. So I managed to decrease it and then went off to college and played ball, you know, before I got injured. So yeah. So it was like,
it's interesting I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, cause like I tried to numb the pain with different things too.
Right.
In the military, it was alcohol, right? It was you're just numbing the pain. And and so many people, that's what we tend to gravitate towards because that's what we have. And that's why it's so important for us to form these support communities and have these avenues for people. So now they don't have to numb it. They can actually heal.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was rough. So 13, you know, having that and then having those thoughts come up. So I kind of like suppressed it. And then they popped up at 18. I'm having thoughts again. I'm like, I thought I was done. And then it happened when I got into the military and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why is this happening? But, it hurt. It was sad. And so going and seeing her go through that, it was just a reminder of what I went through. And I did not want her to be silenced. I want her to stand up. And she did. She stood up to the guy who did it. Unfortunately, they blamed her still. And justice was not served. And but it was, I was so happy that she even was okay to just say it, you know, or to express herself. So,
yeah.
So going through that and then, you know, go to your first duty station and I'm like trying to process my sister's situation and I'm trying to process this. And then within 60 days of being at my duty station, I got sexually assaulted by my first sergeant.
I just got chills. Your first sergeant. Oh, the person that you're supposed to be able to go to.
Yes.
When you have issues. That's a great person. Wow. Okay. We're going to get into that because I'm very curious to hear about that. But I want to kind of backtrack. I went through a women veteran leadership program with a nonprofit called The Mission Continues. And we were in this huge room that was 70 of us that got picked to come out there. Right. And we were talking about stuff and I was talking, I had the mic and I was talking about, I don't even remember exactly what led to it, but I was talking about how we suppress and, you know, we never really talk about things. Right. And I said, how many women in here have had military sexual trauma? And girl, I swear there was probably only 3 women in that whole entire room that did not raise their hand.
Wow.
It is so common.
It is.
It is so common.
Yeah.
But your first sergeant though.
Yeah. And it was the first, I think it was like the first or second day I was there. Cause you know, you had to walk around it in process. You had to have them sign off on your sheets and I had my blues on. So I'm sitting there with my blues on and I guess my ribbon was kind of, you know, messed up or whatever. So it started with, oh, hey, you know, hey, nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there like, okay, cool. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm an airman basic. So they really, the stuff I got being an airman basic, it was horrible.
Oh, goodness.
But yes.
You didn't get the 2-stripe? You didn't get that?
No.
That must have been when I went in. They were giving them away like it was candy.
Yeah. I could have, but I was like, no, because, you know, the 2-stripe is like 6-year, you know, and I was like, I'm just going to do a 4-year and get out. Just get away and come back. But yeah, so he was putting, you know, fixing my ribbon and it became like, okay, I was like, sir, my ribbon's already fixed. Like, and it came groping my breasts and I'm like, okay, like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh no, you know, oh, I'm just kidding. You know, it was so, you could tell he has done it before. He was comfortable with it.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a grope in the breast, and it was like to the point where he was trying to take my pants off. And as soon as that happened, I took my pants up and I ran out. And so thank God I was froze for a second, but if I would have stayed there, it would have went worse. It would have got worse.
Jesus.
So when I ran out, there was a girl outside and she was picking rocks. And I remember meeting her, and she was probably the nicest person I met when I first got to my duty station. And she said, he touched you, didn't you? Didn't he? And I was like, yes. She said, if you say anything, you're going to be out here picking rocks like me. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Yes. So she told me that, you know, she was picking rocks and doing what they call it, rod squad, you know, cleaning up around the base, because she made, you know, had told somebody that he touched her. And yeah. And so she was like,
club. We used to call it that. Yeah.
Yes.
And for anybody that doesn't know, because I know there's a lot of people that are like, what is a first sergeant, right? Because we're just saying it like the first sergeant is like, that's that person that's supposed to be your main supporter of the unit.
Right.
Right. Like that's like the mentor, the counselor, the they're supposed to look out for you. Mm-hmm. So for anybody that's out there that isn't affiliated with the Air Force or, you know, the military or whatever, that's what that is. So the fact that that person is out of, I mean, not that it's any better from anyone, right? But the fact that that person is the one that did this to you, I mean, that's a whole nother level. You know, so now your view of the Air Force is totally skewed, right? Because you're just like, okay, this person that's supposed to be looking out for me is doing this, and I can't even say anything.
Yeah. So like when things will happen, like family members get sick or whatever, or, you know, you have to go see the first sergeant. I'm like, I can't see him. I'm not going to see him. So I'm not going to say nothing to this man. And a good thing about it is that he left within a few months after, I think he retired. I think he was forced to retire. I don't know the full story, but he left. So now I have a woman coming in. I'm like, oh, you know, it was good. It was good. Not having to see him, but, just hearing her story and what she went through was a lot. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything because I'm not ready to go back home. I don't want to get dishonorable discharge. So I just shut up. And like you said earlier, alcohol started being my friend. I couldn't use drugs. So I started drinking heavy. And I think I drank heavy on and off for like 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
So just think about, I'm a cop at the gate and I'm still drunk. And what if somebody comes there? I'm supposed to protect the base. And I can't even hardly hold my weapon because I'm drunk. You know what I mean? But everybody there knew. Like,
it's very common too. Yes. That's the thing. Like certain career fields and the flight line was the same way. Like it was very common for us to be partying and then have to go to work.
Right?
It was, especially back, you know, back around those times, it was a lot more relaxed, right? Like we still had rules. There was a lot of rules. But it was almost like it was like people just expected it.
Yeah.
If you showed up hungover, it's like it was expected.
That's what it was. And I mean, even they would feed us.
I mean, nowadays they'll hang you, right? But back then it was like, it was just normal operation. So if you were going through any kind of stuff like that where you had to keep it in, and I had to do the same, right? Like when you're going through that stuff, you're numbing, you're back to numbing the pain. Right. Just
right.
Like you were doing before.
Right.
Like, except for, like you said, you can't do drugs now.
So yeah.
What are you gonna do? Well, I can drink.
Yeah. And the thing about it, like nobody, if you had these issues, nobody was there. You can really talk to me about it. Like, we didn't talk about military sexual trauma. We didn't have these, these calls, or we didn't have like alcohol. You aren't supposed to drink this. You know, back then it wasn't like that at all.
Right.
It was, oh, let's have fun. You would drink with your commanders. You would drink with your, we all were drinking. So it wasn't uncommon, but then I had a good friend of mine there who had committed suicide. So I was going through this and then the suicide, and I was the last person to see him at the gate. So, so I'm sitting there and I'm driving, and this was the crazy part. I think he knew something happened to me too. A lot of the guys used to make jokes like, don't go to the first sergeant office, he's going to touch you. And they would laugh about it. So our whole flight knew, our whole group of people knew he was capable of that, but nobody would step up to him. Except for that one young lady. But yes, I talked to him, and I remember I'm going through this drinking and stuff. And he told me, he was like, you're going to be okay. You know, just please, you know, do better. Like, he was the one guy who encouraged me. And so I go and Sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. Look, that's, you're real. You're real. These stories are hard to talk about. Yeah. And somebody out there needs to hear what you're saying.
His story is like hard. I don't know why I can't. It's like been 20 years, but for some reason, every time I'm like, ugh.
There's no timeline. I tell people that all the time. Right. Look, there is timeline on healing.
It's not. But I, you know how like you see people and you see the pain they go through. And I saw him. I was like, he's struggling. Mm. And I went and I relieved him to go eat because it was his lunchtime. And I was on the, you know, basically I was like the person who relieves everybody to go eat lunch. And so I went in and, you know, he was like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And he was like, after, you know, after you get off work, let's go eat. And, you know, we both had Ford F-150. So we thought we were cool. And so he was like, yeah, we're going to eat and we're going to talk. So I was like, okay. And next thing you know, I drive off and I hear pop, pop. And I'm like, okay, what is going on? And so he had, you know, committed suicide.
Oh, my
and God. I don't know what that I quickly. Don't. Yes. And so it was so crazy that they sat there. I'm seeing blood come out and everybody's screaming on the mic. And I'm like, there's no way. So I'm thinking like a tire is flat or something. And they sat down, they interviewed me like I was, let me check your weapon. Let me see if you have any magazines. You know, let me check your magazines. Let me see if you have any ammo, you know, missing. And I'm like, what? It wasn't even no compassion. Like, what did he say to you? You know, what's going on or anything like that? It was like they blamed us for him committing suicide, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so it was just so weird to be there and dealing with that toxicity as soon as I'm leaving home, you know, running from that. And then all this stuff happened. I'm like, oh my God. But the crazy thing about one thing I want to tell people about when it comes to suicide, they brief us with all these things. They tell us, you know, oh, they give their stuff away. They do this, they do this. And that's not true. Some of the people who I've known that committed suicide smiled up to the moment they did it.
We're
laughing
that.
Up to the moment.
That's what I
yeah.
Known. Yeah.
Yeah. So that stigma of that is horrible. So to see him go through that and not really understand he was hurting so bad, it bothers me to this day.
Yeah.
And how he was treated. And so, yeah, so that first duty station was a mess. It was stressful.
Yeah.
And you're drinking.
I'm gonna go back real quick because I don't want to just gloss over this because I do talk about this in my story sometimes. Like I've had those thoughts, right?
Yeah.
And nobody would have ever known. And that's the thing. And like I said, like the people that I've known that I did it, I've known people when I was in the Air Force. Like I had one guy that I had supervised for years. He was my best troop. No idea, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and he had just had a baby, right? Like. These are people that the people, I don't want to say too much because I'm always very careful about this because somebody's going to come after me. Most of the time, in my experience and probably yours and most of the people I've talked to, it's the people who don't talk about it that are really going to do it.
Yeah.
It's the people who smile all the time. Those are the people we need to be checking on the most.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the
definitely. People. Yeah. I know somebody said, check on your strong friends. I'm like, I hear that quote, but it's true. Like the ones that you think are the strongest ones, those are the ones that are, you know, and so when that happened, we didn't talk previously to that. We didn't talk about suicide prevention. You know, back then we didn't, that's something that we didn't.
Yeah. It wasn't really that discussed.
Mental health was, yeah, it was not. And I felt like I used to hate suicide prevention meetings. I'm sorry to be honest, the computer-based training, I hated it.
Yeah. Me too.
Because it was like, you're telling somebody how to do it. That's how I felt. If you're telling me, if I give my stuff away, if I do this, that people know I commit suicide, I'm going to do the opposite.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was. Right.
Now I used to training. Get that same feeling.
And yeah.
Just, it was so impersonal. Right. Yes. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah. I did not like it. And it just made me so uncomfortable. So you know, the drinking happened, got married, domestic violence.
Oh God.
So I went through a lot. My first 4 years was all trauma, just back to back happening. And sometimes I blame God, like I deserved it. You know, was it me? Is it something I did? Was it, you know, you always wonder like, why do I have to struggle? You know, I think I have such a good heart.
You know what it is? And this, I talk about this all the time now. You had baggage before you left.
Yep.
We don't leave that baggage in the place that it's at. We carry it with us. Mm-hmm. Right. So we think, yeah, and you didn't heal, you hadn't healed from all the things that had happened in your life. I didn't either. Right. Mm-hmm. So here we are. We go into, you know, the military. We're carrying all that baggage with us. So that's why, like, when parents are like, I've had a parent say, well, I'm just going to send them to the military. And I'm like, well, you better make sure that they're healed before they go.
Yes.
Before they go. Don't expect the military to fix them.
Correct.
It's not going to happen.
Right? Yes.
And we know this from personal experience. So that's the thing, is like, you know, we're getting out of wherever we need to get out from, mm-hmm. but everything's going with us. We're still the same person.
Yeah. And as a recruiter, I used to tell people that too. Like, someone come, like, because we're counselors at the end of the day, you know, I love my job and I'm sitting there talking and they would say the same thing. And my thing, I would tell them the same thing you said. If you're not, you don't go, you're not ready, but they'll go to the army or something like that. And then they get discharged 6 months later. But I'm like, man, I told you, like, listen to me. So you're right. The military is not a place for you to go run and seek help. It's not. It's a place where, you know, you have dealt with those issues and that now you feel like this is a way you can succeed or do something better and different with your life.
Well, because you end up bringing more toxicity into your life. Correct. Right? Like, correct. And obviously not, I'm not saying, you know, the MST and stuff like that, that's never our fault. Right. Like, I blame myself for it for a really long time. And I actually am a therapist. She was finally like, okay, Jody, right.
Yeah.
None of that is our fault, but you know, you talked about your relationship, your marriage, right. You end up in toxic situations anyway, because you still haven't healed. So what happens? We gravitate towards, and there's a lot of research on this, right? We gravitate towards what we're comfortable with.
Correct. Yeah. And so going through that, it was, that relationship was, it taught me a lot, you know, domestic violence. I did see that with, you know, some family members. So it was, when I saw it, I was like, oh, or when it first happened, I was like, oh, this is a little love tap, you know, and those taps become, you know, belts around the neck, you know what I mean? It started getting intense. Yeah. And at that time I was in a, interracial relationship. So that was another issue I had, because seeing a Black woman and a white man, we were getting teased and picked on all the time.
I'm in one too, so
so teased all the time, and it was just hard for us. So it's just like, I wanted that love and support, because what we were going through together, I was hoping for that, and it just got worse. And he wasn't used to that, so it was his anger on how he was treated, he would put it on me, you know. So yeah, so the good thing about it, my first sergeant saw me, and let me back up. 6 weeks after I had my son, I think back then, you know, you could deploy at 6 weeks. Guess where I was? Getting on a flight to deploy. Yes. So my body was still not healed. So I had to send my son to my grandparents' house, and I'm sitting here struggling, like, on this plane. They give me the biggest gun, the 249 Bravo, which is heavy to carry. And I'm still, you know, breastfeeding mom, still going through that. And it was a lot.
When was that? What year was that?
This was 2003.
Okay. So that was still pretty early on.
Yeah. This was 03. Yeah. So it was like a year. Yeah. It was like,
you didn't say he was 20 earlier. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was, so I was just like, I can't. So it was a lot, but when I got over there, it gave me time to reflect. Like, that deployment, people don't understand, like, deployments, you know, they're scary. We go through things or whatever, but that deployment actually had me sit down. And I sat down and I reflected on myself while I was there. I reflected that I knew the marriage wasn't right. I reflected on, I was scared because I was a new mom. And then I was thinking about, what will my son go through because he's biracial? You know, I was thinking about all these things. Mm-hmm. And it also helped me stop drinking. So it was a moment of, okay, well, in the beginning we could drink there, and then it stopped that. But it was a time to, like, sit down and really understand me for once in my life. But when I came back, started drinking again, you know? So it was a lot, but I will tell you, when I came back, I was so different. And my first sergeant, who was a woman, she actually gave me orders to Korea. She said, get out of here. He's going to kill you if you stay here, because we were fighting. And she said, get out of here and start your life, because this is not for you. And so to finally be seen and be heard by a woman, you know, because us women, we sometimes go back and forth and we can be catty, but to find someone who can actually, who was like, go, that's when my healing actually began. So I left.
That's amazing.
I left and Yeah, so I left and I traveled the world, and you know, fortunately NST happened again, but it was rape this time. But I got to a point where I lost myself again, you know, going to Korea, then Germany. And then my sister was murdered, the one I talked about you earlier, She ended up being raped and killed. So I dealt with that. And in 2009 was when the day I had a gun in my head and I attempted suicide. And only the greatest
chills when you said that.
Yeah, the hardest, I won't say the hardest, the most, I say the biggest blessing, let me do that, was when the guy I dated jumped on me and grabbed the gun. Because I should be dead. Like my hand, the pressure.
Thank God you had somebody there with you.
Yes. And what's so weird is I was in the corner of the house, so I didn't think he could see me. I did not want anybody to see me.
Right.
So for him to do that in that quick second was like, oh my gosh, like I'm meant to be here. And that's, I would say that's when it really, the healing started happening.
Isn't that
really
interesting? Really. And I'm going to send you a video like, you know, later, but it's interesting. Cause I share my story now. And I tell people, like, it was just a couple years ago that I put a gun to my chin. Right. Mm-hmm. But the first thought I had was I'm supposed to be here taking care of my dog. And if I do this, I can't do that. Right. Mm-hmm. But the second thought I had is what really got me. And that was, what if my daughter walked in first? What if she found me first? But what you said is why I wanted to say this. It shifted my mindset tremendously. I told myself I would never allow myself to get to that ever again. And it sounds like that's what you did too.
Yeah, I did. And doing that, and I did revert back, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute. But when I didn't think about my son. That's a bad thing to say. When I just wanted the pain to stop. I didn't care that I was a mother. I didn't care that, you know, I was in a relationship, a, you know, good relationship at that time. I didn't care about that. I just wanted the pain to end by any means necessary. Wow. And my son was still, you know, was with my grandparents because I was active duty traveling around. So I was okay. Like I was so okay with it. Yeah, yeah. I honestly was okay with it. And it's sad. I got to that point where like I need to be here, but I just couldn't take it. I couldn't deal with the trauma. I didn't want to think about it. It's
so
everything.
Many people, that happens so much. That's the sad part. You know, like we talk about the 22 a day. I'm pretty sure if they really dug deeper, it's probably more than 22, right? But that's the thing. It's like there's so many people, we get to that point and it's like we want to numb it, but you know, the drugs and the alcohol, that's just temporary. It, you know, then we got to wake up, but we want the actual, this is going to last longer. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately in that moment, a lot of people, they don't come out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I told myself I wasn't going to, I was like, I'm not going to do this. Like that's because we're always told Black people don't kill themselves. You know, that I have to be honest. We were always told that that's a sin. You're going to die. Right. I mean, you're going to go to hell. Those things like that's what. So suicide, my first kind of like thought of suicide happened at 13, you know, but I didn't think, and my best friend committed suicide at 13. That was the first one, but I didn't think I was going to do that. Like I was, you know, I didn't think I was going to. So to be in that mindset, I started gaining like a sense of empathy for those, like really understanding what mental health was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's not a crazy person disease. It's the stigma that we had on mental health. And so I started thinking I was crazy for feeling this way. And I didn't have any help. And when you're in the military, as soon as you say, hey, I need to see somebody, it's okay, we're going to take your gun away and we're going to do this.
Mine was line badge. Yep.
Yep. Line badge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I did security on the, security on the flight line, line badge, all those things away. And I'm like, okay, so what do I do? Just suffer alone. So the gun was the first thing and that got taken away. And then, my actual inner room first sergeant talked to me, and you know, I was very skeptical because I couldn't deal with the male first sergeant. I was like, oh, here we go again. But he actually sat down and he was like, and he's a good friend to mine to this day. He was like, I see you, you're struggling. Go home. Let me go home, be with my family. And he actually even told me about Military One Source because he was like, if you don't want this your record, go to Military One Source. So I went there, I sought counseling outside of the military, and I had to use keywords. You know, I couldn't say do you want to kill yourself? Oh no, but I just need to get rid of this trauma. So
right.
It was hard to be forthcoming, but to finally have somebody listen to you.
Yeah.
The best thing in the world. Yeah, it was, huge. It was good. So yeah. crazy stuff, right? All this was like less than 2 years in, all the stuff.
I'm listening to the years and I'm like, man, she went through all this stuff early on. Like,
yes, like, I did.
And it's so common though. I mean, I know I went through a lot early on too. And it's just like, that's what happens. But we just accept it, you know, especially if we've already been through stuff in our lives. We're just like, oh, well, okay, more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you don't know where to go. You're like, okay, they don't prepare you for if I got injured or something. I wasn't prepared to go home. I wasn't ready. And I know that I had to figure this out because I was not ready to go back. I was not healing. I was not. So actually, after all that happened, I asked God, I said, if you remove this hurt from me, this hate from me for these people, I will promise I will do whatever you want me to do. Like, I will serve you. And since then, it was like speaking about my story start coming out, even being a recruiter. This is crazy. I was told I was never going to be a recruiter, right? When I applied for it. They're like, no, you're not going to be a recruiter. You don't like speaking to people, like you're so to yourself. You'll those be surprised. Yes. Yes. It was so weird. And so I would tell people recruiting saved my life because I actually was able to step on stage and talk to people about what it meant for me to be a veteran, what I went through. And then I also talked to young women who had also been sexually assaulted by family members like me. Mm. So it opened my eyes to just, I don't know, just not just heal myself, but also be a voice for others.
Yeah.
And the hardest part was being a recruiter was when you get a phone call from one of the girls that you put in saying, hey, she wanted to kill herself too. And she had MST. And I'm sitting there and I'm promising her. It hurt. I'm promising her, we have all these new things. You're not going to have to struggle like I have. And I dropped the ball because I promised something that I couldn't do.
That's not on you.
It's not on
me. And that's what else we have to learn, right? We can't, I did that for a really long time. We can't harbor that guilt.
But reason why I say I dropped the ball is because right then and there, which I know it wasn't my fault that happened, but when I say drop the ball is because I should have been transparent with her and say, look, if this happens to you, or if you go through this, contact these people. I should have got her. I should have prepared her. And so when her situation happened, when I became, you know, I did recruiting for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I started preparing all my troops, where the women, men, whatever. I sat down with them. I said, look, and the Air Force started giving us cars to say, hey, talk to, you know, Attorney General or talk to these people if these things happen.
Yes.
Civilian and, you know, in the military. Yeah. So I started talking to them about that. And it actually helped because some of them, I see them now, just their voice, their vocal, like, this person sexually assaulted me, let's go to court. And so it taught me so much. And you don't know how many people you can heal from your pain. You know what I'm saying?
That.
You never know. You never know. So
I tell people that all the time, like, because I always wrote, I would write privately. So from the age of 15 on, that's how I was healed. That's how I was kind of getting through stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And I never really shared anything, but that's what I finally know now. It's not only am I healing more when I tell my story, but now I know that I'm helping a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me happy.
Yes, right? It is. I won't say crazy, but it's so interesting that when you say things on social media, like me and you, and we talk about what goes on, and I had women from, not Vietnam, but Desert Storm reached out to me and said, hey, I was sexually assaulted. And I feel like I can like say something now, even though it happened a long time ago, they feel like they can share that and get off their chest. It was interesting to hear that. Like, these ladies are older.
Yeah.
But the fact that they see your story and they see what you do and they're like, wow, this happened to me 50 years ago and your story changed my life, you know?
Yeah.
So you never know.
It like, just takes, it takes people being willing to talk about it.
Yes. And we That's have to.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll tell you, like, a lot of the people that I get to be around now, I always say I get to be because I'm grateful for them.
Yeah.
They helped me get to this point because that's how it happened. They were talking about stuff and I was like, well, I can relate to that. And then I would start kind of sharing a little bit at a time. And after a few years, now I'm able to share. And, you know, but it didn't come all at once. Like I tell people the same thing, it's health, life, business, whatever it is, it's never going to happen overnight, right? But we just keep trucking along. And once there's some of us who we just, I don't know, it sounds like you're definitely this type of person too, but it's like, I thrive on knowing that I get to help people.
Yeah.
And so when people message me and they say, thank you for sharing that because I needed to hear that today. Like now I'm like, oh, I need to keep sharing. Right. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it don't, you know, we don't do this for likes and we don't do this for followers. We do it because this is our mission. This is our purpose. This is why we do this. Exactly. And sometimes I would say, sometimes your pain births your purpose. You don't,
I saw that. That's the title of this podcast.
Yeah. It does.
Your pain is your purpose.
Yeah. And you never know. It's like, we go through so much and we go through it not to keep it in. We go through it to help others. That's what mm-hmm. life is about.
Yeah.
But the one thing we have to remember though, is generational trauma is so present. Oof. So when I healed, I had to make sure I had to heal, not just for myself, but my son.
Yes.
And unfortunately my son had to, he saw what I was going through, PTSD. He saw everything I was going through and he felt the effects of it. This is why it's important to seek help. And my generational came from what my mom went through. And when we heal, it's not just healing for ourselves, it's healing so our next generation can have a better life. So with going through what I'm going through right now, currently, you know, getting out the military and now just like understanding who I am. And then now being around my son, my oldest son is 20. And now he had an opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. And thank God he came back. And that was one thing that I struggled with too. And this was in November. Mm. So Thanksgiving, I was spending time with him.
Jesus.
And I had to stop blaming myself for him being the way he was. I had to, because I blamed myself. A gun in my head in November. November 28th, I had another gun to my head. Mm. And I was like, okay, But this time I threw it down. And I was like, girl, you better figure this out now. Yeah. Like you can't. So seeing him struggle because of, I didn't know how to love him because I never knew how to, I never was taught how to love
that part.
It poured onto him.
Yeah.
And so now I'm learning to love him differently. Even though he's older, I'm learning to love him differently and tell him like, mama went through it. You know, I'm not perfect. Like this, this decorated, you know, airman that you see or whatever. I'm not perfect. Right. You know what I mean? I'm not. So it gave me my healing also was, I was able to heal him. You know, and that was the crazy part, but that's what I'm on right now. I'm on a healing journey and I have a 12-year-old son too. And so I learned how to be a better parent with him as well. Yeah. But right now we go through so much and I would not trade my military experience for the world.
Right.
But now I know how to look at it differently. Instead of being hurt by it, I know how it helped me, you know? Yeah. So that's where I'm at now.
Girl, that's a lot. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, cause you have an acronym and I thought it was pretty cool. So I want you to talk about your acronym and what it means and what that means to you.
So KeyFit, I used to be in the fitness and that didn't work out. So key is knowledge, health, empowerment,
mental health, physical health. Look, we need all of it.
Yes. it is. And I'm learning that too. Spiritual health as well, man. But KeyFit, so it's K-E-Y. So knowledge, empowerment, unity. And the Y is spelled Y-O-U-N-I-T-Y. Mm-hmm. And I always say, you know, the biggest thing that we need to do is bring awareness, certainly for sexual assault and the things I talk about. Awareness and prevention is very important. Yeah. And then that support, we need unity. We're all scattered all over the world and we need to come together and sit down and support our brothers and sisters or whoever's going through these. So I believe unity is the big part. And fit was the part of, you know, the wellness part of being fit, mind, body, and spirit. So I came up with that. Actually, I prayed and it popped up and I was like, okay,
that's awesome.
Okay.
So I ended up having an acronym come to me a while back and it's C, it's S-E-E. And you said this a few times about how important it is to be seen, right? Because sometimes we don't know how to voice everything, right? I still struggle with that. And I don't know if you do, but it's like when you're not used to using your voice, you can't always just use it. Right.
Yeah.
And so I had this acronym and it just came to me and you were talking about prayer and it came to me while I was praying too. And it was support, encourage, and power.
Yes.
And I was just like, okay, I don't know where this is going, but I'm just going to keep going with it. And I say it all the time. I'm like, it's just, you know, we have to see each other. We have to see. Yes. We have to use both of our eyes. We have to see deeper than what we see right here.
Right. Yeah. And you know, with us, we just want to be seen. Yeah. Whether you're a survivor, whether you're a, you know, victim turning into a survivor, you just want to be seen and you want to be heard. And so yeah. I love that, the fact that you have that. But yeah, right now it's, you know, I got out a year ago, and it's that, you know, went straight into corporate, and I was still dealing. I'm still in the midst. I say I'm not healed yet, but I'm always, every day I'm taking it, you know, yeah. I'm healing, I'm being better. Yeah. And so being in corporate, it didn't give me or jumping straight from the military out into corporate, it didn't give me time to process everything.
Yeah.
So May, I stopped working. I said, look, I got to process this. I got to sit in it. I have to visit the roads I don't want to go down. I have to go see the things that I don't want to see. And I have to process being back home and understand, God, why am I here? You know, what do you want me to do here? And then so I can move forward. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm taking time to really, tap into what I love, which is helping others, but also tap into myself first.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's interesting. Yeah. I talk about, because I went through trauma therapy, so it's called EMDR. It's an acronym.
Oh, I heard about that.
I highly recommend it.
Okay.
One of the toughest things I've ever done, but it allowed me to come out a lot different. But again, it's a healing journey, right? Like, this is never going to, I tell people, I'm like, look, healing is great, but it never stops. So don't think you're fixed. Don't think you're just, you got to stop the tools that are working for you. If they're working, you better keep using them.
Yes.
Every single day. Yes. So people are like, why do you wake up so early? Why do you do this? Why do you go to the gym? Why do you, because I must, it is a must. It's not a desire. It's not like, oh yeah, I'm so motivated. I'm not motivated to get up early in the morning every single day.
That's true.
But I know what happens when I don't. I know what road that can lead me to. And I don't desire that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's like, we have to learn, you know, all these tools. So when I went through that, I had to face everything. So that's why it's hard. But there's a program called Operation New Uniform that helps veterans transition out of the military. Mm-hmm. And I was actually one of the mentors for them for a little bit. And I ended up on a call with this guy, and come to find out, he had a lot of trauma in his life. And so he's going through it right now, and I'm kind of his support person. So he'll text me, hey, this happened. And, you know, and I think that's pretty cool. And like I said, it's a difficult thing. So if anybody's out there listening, it is called EMDR. It is an acronym. You can Google it. Look for a really good therapist, because obviously, you know, there's different people for everyone. I had to go through a couple therapists before I found a good one.
Oh yes, me too.
Yes. Right. And so that's the thing, is, you know, don't give up. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. Don't give up. But for anybody out there who's listening, if you have suffered trauma in your life, and honestly, if we're being honest with ourselves, probably all of us have in some way, shape, or form. And there's no level of trauma. I was just had a good conversation with a friend of mine earlier today. There's no level. Like, don't think that your trauma is any less than anybody else's, right? Like, maybe you haven't gone through, if you're out there listening, if you haven't gone through, you know, what she's gone through, or maybe what I've gone through, or whatever, that's okay. You've still gone through something, right? Yeah. So there's still something. If you feel like you're not excelling in life or moving forward in life, there's still something holding you back. Right. So that's what we have to start facing. And sometimes we don't even know what that is. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I had trauma since the age of 3, and I didn't even know. I was 3. But once we started uncovering things, that's what happened. And so here I was 43 by the time I started this. 40 years of trauma. So that's why it was probably harder for me. Don't wait that long, you guys. Don't wait that long.
And saying therapy doesn't work. I hear that all the time. Like, therapy, you just haven't found the right person that
you haven't
that works
found
for
the
you.
Right person. Correct. That's it. I mean, it's the same with coaches, life coaches, right? There's so many of us doing things out there. So, and I always say, I'm not the person for everybody, right? You're not going to be the person for everybody, but we are going to be for some. And, and the same with therapists, right? Like, not every therapist. I went to one therapist. She didn't understand anything. She made me feel worse about myself. Not intentionally. Wow. She was just young, and she didn't go through anything in her life. So of course she couldn't understand where I was coming from when I started, you know, talking about some of these things. She's asking me to talk about my past and stuff. She's like, I think she thought it was too much for her. So, but that didn't last very long, right? Because now I'm feeling even worse about myself.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're, you know, like she said, just keep going. Don't mm-hmm. just give up after that first one. You will find the right one. I was blessed. I will say this. I was truly blessed with my therapist because she was exactly what I needed. She gave me tough love. she supported me through it. And she, you know, there's different ways that they, things that they do during the EMDR sessions or whatever, but she knew what to do and what not to do. And she got to know me to where she could understand, okay, well, this is going to help her. Right. And I mean, it was a long journey. I went through, it took about a year.
Oh, wow.
About a year. Yeah. It was a long journey. And depending on, you know, how much trauma people have, it can, everybody's different. Everybody's different. So I just tell people, like, when you get ready to sign up for the long haul. But, and then also have a good support system. So like we say, you know, just being that support system for other people. Mm-hmm.
Is super important.
I tell people, like, you can text me. If you're going through EMDR, text me because it's going to be rough. And there was times I got out of the sessions and I would sit in my car for the first session. I think I sat in my car for like an hour after that. I wasn't able to go home straight away. Like, cause you got to think you're processing so much. Things are coming out and you're just like, oh, what is going on?
Wow.
But like I said, when it's said and done, it was definitely the best thing that I did.
Yeah. So, I want to do that. I really want to, cause I don't want to do any, like I don't want to do the pills. You know, they gave me pills for depression. I don't want to deal with that. Like, I stopped taking pills.
Yeah.
I just want to face it. I don't want anything to coat it. I've been coating it with alcohol, drugs when I was young. I want to face it. So I think I definitely have to look into that.
Yeah. And she did. I mean, she asked me, she was like, you want me to prescribe you? And I have we could do a whole a whole nother podcast on why I don't take prescription medications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there is a reason. And like you said, you know, if you already have that codependency kind of in you, and then to depend on this other medication, I mean, sometimes it is necessary, but yeah, I got diagnosed with PTSD, anxiety, and what else? Depression.
Yeah.
And she asked me, she said, do you need to take anything? I said, no, I just need the people around me to understand.
You know, yes.
I'm not always going to be okay. I'm going to need a minute. I'm going to have to ride to the beach every now and then. And, but that's the thing. It's like, we have to know how to communicate with the people around us. And if they don't understand us, then we know that they're not for us.
Right. The two things that helped me was my self-awareness of what triggers me and what I'm going through. And then my boundaries. Oh my God. Those boundaries.
So you're already
are
ahead of the game. So if you go through it, you might not take as long because I had to work through all that.
I have my boundaries. I mean, boundaries are even with people, like even your family members, like people close to you. You have to
the worst ones.
Yes. Oh, and still don't understand mental health. And it's she's acting crazy today.
Four more podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, she's acting crazy today because I'm like, I just don't want to be around y'all right now. And it's okay. It's okay for me not to be around y'all. But it's a process. So understand boundaries. Oof. I know we definitely could talk about that all day.
Yes.
Boundaries will help me get divorced too. Boundaries.
We can drop the mic on that one. But it is, it's so important. And then, you know, like depending on where you decide to go with your business and things like that, it's going to continue being important because like for me, I realized, you know, as a health coach, I'd been a health coach for many, many years. I was pouring from an empty cup though.
Mm.
And that only lasts so long. Right.
Yeah.
So it's very important to have those boundaries. Don't let people suck the life out of you. Be aware when they do start sucking the life out of you.
Yeah.
And so that's huge. You're already way ahead of the game. So definitely, I commend you and I acknowledge you for just all the work that you've done internally.
Yeah. Thank you. So. And it's a career change for me because I'm the one that when I got the military, I was helping with American Corporate Partners. I was helping with resumes and helping transition veterans find jobs. So I was doing that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I love it, but this is not my calling. So it was hard for me to transition from that to back to what I love to do, which is talk about mental health.
Yeah.
And I think, I can't get off track again. Like I can't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes we listen to other people that tell you, oh, you're better at this. And we need to listen to ourselves. Right.
Yes.
So that's another thing of trying to be, people pleaser, want to help, you know, and sometimes we got to stop. Yeah. And sometimes we have to stop.
I have a couple blogs on that and another podcast on that too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. this time was for me to say, what makes me happy? What can I can wake up every day and do? What brings me joy? Yes. And that's what I had to do. I love working with veterans. I love everything about it, but it's just my time to kind of sit back and who are you?
Yeah.
Like, who are you?
And it is so important. And I think we all go through that journey. I mean, I was doing, you know, I've done a lot of odds and ends things since I got out, and it is, you know, now I say, I just want the people to want me to pour into them. You know, don't limit me. Please don't limit me. Because what happens is once I get limited, now my mental health is getting affected.
Yes.
So that's great that you're noticing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not what we need to go back to. We don't want to go back. We're not supposed to be going backwards. We're supposed to be moving forward. And we can't do that if we're still kind of like trying to do, you know, some of these little things that people are like, you're good at that. You should do this. Yeah. Well, that's not where I belong.
And then one thing that I had to understand, I can help everybody. That was another thing. Like, everybody reaches out and I'm giving you like the tools and helping you and with all this stuff, and you just don't want, sometimes people don't want to be healed.
Can't help people that don't want to be helped.
Right. And that's okay. So this part, what me and you were doing, it's rough sometimes, but you have to know that, hey, I can't help everybody and it's okay.
Yeah.
I can, so I don't know. Sometimes we're okay with trauma.
We're gonna be doing some stuff together. You don't know what I got under my belt right now, but I feel something forming. So we'll discuss that later.
yes.
So go ahead.
Oh no, you're good. I love this.
I wanted to point out, because I want everybody, you know, to go definitely follow on your Facebook and all the social media. I'll make sure I put that out on the podcast. I'm trying to move my mouse. So go ahead and talk about your website a little bit.
So my website, KeyFit LLC, right now what I'm doing is I'm speaking. I've been on different platforms, NBC, CBS, and did some things with National Crime Victim Law Institute. So I basically go out and tell my story, and then I help others, you know, who are, you know, need help. So my website is, you know, if somebody's interested in saying, hey, I want help, or if they want to reach out, you know, just to any kind of support or mentoring, just go on my website. You can book a consultation and we can go and go from there, but it's keyfitllc.com. So I enjoy it. I am happy for where I'm at right now. So
I love it. I love it. I love your website. I was looking at it, I was like, ooh, this is pretty.
You know what? There's a veteran who does them for a very low price. So it's like $100 a year. I'll get
that information from you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's, and I'm going to go change veterans. It.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm going to go change a few things. But because I want my actual pictures on there, but he did a very good job. I did it and he just kind of amplified it. So I'm very, very happy.
Well, I have too. And I've built them from the ground up, but yeah, I definitely want somebody else to go in there and be like, okay, we need to change this and this. Okay.
Yes. It's amazing. The growth that comes from what we've been through. Like, I love the growth. Yeah. I love seeing, like, you're smiling. Like, I didn't even know, you know, the things that you went through, and still don't know the extent of it, but the fact that you're here and you have this energy and you're helping others and giving back, girl, you got to keep on going.
But the same with
you. You got to keep going.
Same with you. And honestly, you know, we'll make sure we have each other's phone numbers too. Cause I always say that too, like, we need help too, right? Like, we need people in our corner too. And so I always love that I have people I can reach out to. And so I'm like, hey, my family's your family. And, you know, anytime you're in that rut, have people you can reach out to. It's so important. You guys have a trusted person, one or two or even three, that you can reach out to and just say, hey, I'm not okay right now.
Yeah. And make sure they're authentic. That's the thing. I've ran into so many support systems that use me. I call it victim profiting, right? When we go through things.
Again, we could do a whole nother podcast. Yeah. We have like six more topics.
Victim profiting. You know, sometimes they have not been through what we've been through. Yeah. They share our story and they're getting paid for our stories. And that's,
I can share that some of that too. That happened to me. Oh, yep. A lot. I gave a lot of money to money I did it, not have. Like I said, we could go, that could be a whole nother.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, yeah, when so you're going through, when you're, yeah, when you're healing, don't be afraid to share your story when you're ready, but make sure you watch who you share it with, because it's bad out here. Advocacy, what I'm going through. It is a mess. And I'm very shocked. I'm very shocked to sit back and see how I've seen so much money come back. You know, I work with Vanessa Guillen's family. We did a podcast before, but it was all the stuff I saw. You know, it's sad that when we are finally here to share our story, we're healing, how people will latch onto it and use your platform to make money. And it is sad. So I would say anybody who's out there, you know, make sure you understand the person and get to know the person first, you know? So, yeah.
And make sure they're sharing their real stories on social media, not just the highlight reels.
Correct. Like, yes.
This is and real you life, gave permission.
Yeah. And you gave them permission. Yes.
Yes.
Oh man, you don't want to go there.
Yes. Lakeidra, I really do appreciate you coming on again. And I can just foresee some great things. You know, so if you want to lock arms, we can do a whole bunch of stuff together. Cause I love what you're doing. I love that you're stepping out. Cause it is a hard thing. If people think that this is a natural, it's not. We have to do a whole lot of work. Like you said, you didn't talk to a lot of people back in the day. Yeah, I didn't either. Right. So it's not always normal. It's not always comfortable to get out in front and speak to people and, you know, be what we're being right now. So I definitely acknowledge you for just stepping into that purpose and finding who you are meant to be. And you're going to keep finding it. It's going to keep, it's like my therapist always said, the onion, right? It's going to keep peeling it back layer after layer after layer.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing it. It's like, you know, yes, stuff that I'm like, oh, well, yeah, I am good at that. Oh yeah, I do want to do that. Right. Like,
yeah.
And then we have to be careful for the people who try to deter us. You were saying that earlier, right?
Yes.
Like, people be like, oh, well, you got to only do this. Mm-hmm. Well, we're multifaceted people. So don't tell me.
That's true. That's
but we true. Do have to be careful not to get overwhelmed. So that's a whole nother, you know, thing too. Just understanding what we're meant to do and, you know, just let it, you know, let him lead. That's what I say now. I'm like, I don't know. Where are you taking me today?
Yes, you have to, you must. But yeah, I'm so excited to see what you're going to do in the future. I can't wait to see you blow up.
Well, you too. You too. Baby steps. All right, you guys, this has been another episode of Breaking Barriers Now. Thank you so much to my guest today. She's just a phenomenal individual. So make sure you guys go link up with her, check out her website. I like it. So you'll like it too. and keep tuning in, keep supporting. I am still looking for guests. So if you want to be a guest on the show, make sure you reach out. Go to the Instagram, Breaking Barriers Now. You can definitely just go on there and schedule a guest to be on as a guest. Thank you again for being here, and
thank you.
The future is bright.
Thank you so much.
All right, God bless you, everybody. Have a great day.